Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 8, The Lord Slays the King of the Demons, text number 42. So this is in the, instead of from the Brahma Samhita, it's from the Indra Samhita. Pratyanita parama bhavita treta na swabhog swapagbhaga. Daitya kar krantam ridaya kamalam tad griham pratya bodhai. Kala grastam kiyat idam aho nata sushushatam te. Muktistesham nahi bahu mata na tra simha parati kim. Shri Indra Uvacha. Indra, the King of Heaven, said, Pratya Nita, recovered. Parama, O Supreme, Bhavata, by your Lordship, Trayata, who are protecting, Na, us, Swabhaga, shares in the sacrifices, Daitya, Akrantam, afflicted by the demon, Ridaya Kamalam, the lotus-like cores of our hearts. Tat Griham, which is actually your residence. Pratyabodhi, it has been illuminated. Kala Grastam, devoured by time. Kiyat, insignificant. Idam, this world. Aho, alas. Nata, O Lord. Shushushitam, for those who are always engaged in the service. Te, of you. Mukti, liberation from material bondage. Tesham, of them, the pure devotees. Na, not, he, indeed. Bahumata, thought very important. Narasingha, O Lord. Nishingadev, half lion and half human being. Aparai Kim, then what is the use of other possessions? Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. King Indra said, O Supreme Lord, you are the deliverer and protector. Our shares of sacrifices, which are actually yours, have been recovered from the demon by you. Because the demoniac king Hiranyakashipu is most fearsome, our hearts, which were your permanent abode, were all overtaken by him. Now by your presence, the gloom and darkness in our hearts have been dissipated. O Lord, for those who are always engaged in your service, which is more exalted than liberation, all material opulence is insignificant. They do not even care for liberation, what to speak of the benefit of karma, artha, and dharma. Purport. In this material world, there are two kinds of people, the devas, devatas, demigods, and the asuras, demons. Although the demigods are attached to the material enjoyment, they are devotees of the Lord who act according to the rules and regulations of the Vedic injunctions. During the reign of Hiranyakashipu, everyone was disturbed in the routine duties of Vedic civilization. When Hiranyakashipu was killed, all the demigods who had been disturbed by Hiranyakashipu, felt relieved in their general way of life. Because the governments in Kali Yuga is full of demons, the living conditions of devotees are always disturbed. Devotees cannot perform yajna, and thus they cannot partake of the remnants of food offered in the yajna for the worship of the Lord Vishnu. Hope we don't come to that point. The heart of the demigods are always filled with fear of the demons, and therefore they cannot think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The engagement of the demigods is to think of the Lord within the core of their hearts. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yoginam api sarvesham madgaten antaratmana sharavan vajate yomam sameyuktatamo mataha. And of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshiping me in transcendent loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. The demigods fully absorb themselves in meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead to become perfect yogis. Because of the presence of demons, their hearts are filled with the activities of the demons. Thus, the hearts which are meant to be the abode of the Supreme Lord are practically occupied by the demons. All the demigods felt relief when Hiranyakashipu was dead, but they could easily think of the Lord. They could then receive the results of sacrifice, become happy even though in the material world. So the text again. King Indra said, O Supreme Lord, you are our deliverer and protector. Our shares of sacrifice, which are actually yours, have been recovered from the demon by you. Because of the demoniac king Hiranyakashipu is most fearsome, our hearts, which are your permanent abode, were all overtaken by him. Now by your presence, the gloom and darkness in our hearts have been dissipated. O Lord, for those who are always engaged in your service, which is more exalted than liberation, all material opulence is insignificant. They do not even care for liberation, what to speak of the benefit of karma, artha, and dharma. There's a difference between the Sakama devotees of Krishna, who are the demigods, and those who are neophyte devotees, and those who are actually Shuddha Bhaktas. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna in the, let's see, the two kinds of created beings. One is called the divine, and one is called the demoniac. I already explained, so that's 15th chapter, I guess. Dvau imam purusha loke shara chakshara evata shara sarvani bhutani kutastha shara uchate. There are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible, and in the spiritual world, every living entity is infallible. That means everyone who's in the material world or in material consciousness is considered to be fallible. They're not completely in harmony with the desires of Krishna. And everyone in spiritual consciousness, Shuddha Bhaktas and those in the spiritual world, they're called infallible because they're always dovetailed with the interests of Krishna. But then we have a similar verse in the 16th chapter, which follows the 15th. And Krishna says, Dvau bhuta sargaloke smin daiva asram eva cha daiva divishtara sak prokta Asram Parthame Shinu. O Son of Pritara, in this world there are two kinds of created beings. One is called divine, the other demoniac. I've already explained to you at length the divine qualities. Now hear from me of the demoniac. So, what's the difference between the two? Can anyone tell me? The difference between the daivis, the daiva, the asura, and the shara and the akshara. What's that?
Demoniac and asura. The asuras and suras are the sub-category of fallen. No?
Yeah, but both the asuras and the suras are both fallen. Because they're both sakama. So actually, Shuddha Bhakta is infallible. That is, he's always dovetailing the will for Krishna. Infallible doesn't mean he gets 100% on every test. You give him on an ad. Or if you ask him how many angels fit on the tip of a pin, he knows the exact answer immediately, down to the last angel. 1,459,000,000. Oh, just one left. Oh, another one came. Okay. No, he's always dovetailed with the will of Krishna. Therefore, here Krishna will say, Uttama Purushastvanya Paramatma Nidharita Yo Lokama Ajam Avisha Bibhat Yayavam Ishvaraha Bivat Yavyaya Ishvaraha. Besides these two, there is the greatest living personality of the Supreme Lord, the imperishable Lord Himself, who has entered the three worlds maintaining them. And then Krishna will say that anyone who knows me as the Supreme Lord, without doubting, is said to be the knower of everything, and therefore he engages himself in full devotional service. So if we actually know Krishna as God, then we'll engage in full devotional service. But the demigods, because they want to have partly think themselves to be gods in this material world, which is an illusion, because the demigods are just spirit souls like ourselves in the body of a demigod. Even Brahma is just 1/10,000th the size of Tipihara's soul in the body of a big, big Brahma. But the Brahma body is not the soul's body, it belongs to Krishna, and it's being utilized by Krishna. Either when Brahma is engaged in sadhana bhakti under somewhat the spiritual energy, or probably more than we are, or when he's engaged in other outside the realm of pure devotional service, then he's being directed also by the mode of goodness. In any case, Brahma, the soul, is doing nothing, and there are many varieties of souls who are Brahmas. Some of them are gopis, some of the cowherd boys. Because we find in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that Brahma becomes realized after his meditation, and then Krishna comes and shakes his hand and reveals to him that he's a coward boy. And our Brahma, in his Brahma Samhita, he realized that he was the eternal maidservant of Krishna. So does that mean Brahma changed from a coward boy to a maidservant? Is that what he had, a sex change? What does it mean? It means that there are two different Brahmas, two different, they're unlimited. Just like right now, to have the post of Brahma, we find in the Brahma Samhita, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, or even in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the Brahma knocked at the door of Krishna and Dwaraka, said, "Hi, I'd like to see Krishna." So the gatekeeper came and said, "Who are you?" He said, "I'm Brahma." He said, "Really? Okay." They're going down Krishna. So then Krishna, gatekeeper came back and said, "So, which Brahma are you?" "What do you mean, which Brahma I am? How many Brahmas are there? Look, four heads, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, I'll tell him you're the four-headed Brahma." So he went back and Krishna said, "All right, let him in." So he got in. Krishna, they discuss about the problems in the universe as usual. And Krishna said, "Don't fear the demons, I'll take care of them." And then Brahma said, "Well, by the way, you know, how come you asked which Brahma? Are there more than one Brahma in this universe?" So Krishna said, smiled, and then he brought the Brahmas from the different universes. Some of them had 10 heads, some of them had 100 heads, some of them had 1,000. Some had 1,000,000, some had 10,000,000 heads. So according to the size of the universe, Brahmas had different heads. So there are so many Brahmas, and they have so many rasas with Krishna. Now, Brahma is the topmost of the demigods, and he's not necessarily a pure devotee. Just like anyone could be a pure devotee. It's not there's any disqualification. If you're Brahma, you can't be a pure devotee. But Brahmas, like our Brahma, became a pure devotee after some hard lessons he had. After he stole Krishna's cowherd boys, he came down and he became very lamenting that he was such a puffed up person. He offended Krishna so badly because he was so proud of his position as being Brahma, he dared to steal Krishna's cowherd boys and the calves. So he lamented, and therefore he came back as Haridas Thakur, and after chanting 190 rounds every day, he became a pure devotee. And then I guess after his, then he went back as Brahma, because he's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called him Brahma Haridas. In any case, Brahma could be a pure devotee. Even Indra could be a pure devotee. Sometimes Krishna even takes the pose of Indra. When there's no qualified person to take Indra, then he takes the pose. But generally speaking, conditioned souls in the material world take different forms, different positions in the material world according to their mode of nature. And so even Brahma, generally he's a conditioned soul. And at least previously when Brahma was speaking the Brahma Samhita, or at least when he was speaking in the Krishna book, the prayers of Brahma, Prabhupada said he was a sadhana bhakta. He may have become purified after that, but at that time he was a sadhana bhakta, which means kama bhakta, devotee with some material desires. Of course, his desires are not necessarily the same as our desires. His desires, the prince, for instance, to just lord it over a universe, or control the universe on behalf of Krishna, which you have to be an illusion to do, to think like that. Because as soon as you think like that, then you get a false ego, and you think you're a Brahma, which is a problem, because the soul is not Brahma. And it's not, compared to the topmost stage of consciousness, it's not even Brahman realization, it's still in the material concept of life. It's the topmost brahminical platform, but it's not even liberated platform. Therefore, we find Gop Kumara took the post of Brahma, and he was wondering about liberation. He didn't even know about liberation. He had to consult with the persons on Brahmaloka in order to understand what liberation was. And then he strived for liberation, and he achieved it after some time. In any case, the demigods, they're generally in the mode of goodness, and they control the universe on behalf of Krishna. But as long as one is in the material energy, then there is no question of pure affection or Krishna consciousness. The liberated souls, they have no material concept, and therefore they have nothing to do with material gain and loss, material hate and envy, all these different emotions arising from material identification. And therefore, their only experience is Krishna and affection and love for Krishna. And in that state, they're not attracted to fight it out in the illusory energy, because the material nature is just like a dream. Or in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes it as a orivam malamadakshikam ashvatam praho avyayam. Jadamsi yasya paranarni yastvam veda saveda vit. That there is an imperishable banyan tree which has its roots upward and its branches down, and the leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is said to be the knower of the Vedas. In other words, the whole material existence that we're seeing is just a reflection of the real existence. Now, no one in their right mind keeps on diving into the water looking for apples when they actually find out that there is a real tree with real apples on it. In the meantime, because of our forgetfulness, we keep on diving in the water thinking, maybe there is an apple there, I just missed it. We dive in and there's no apple there. We get all wet. We come back and we think, I could swear I saw an apple. Maybe I need glasses. Oh, there it is. All right, back. But if one is fortunate enough to look up and see where the actual apple tree is, and then one can climb the tree and get the apple, then one will not be attracted to diving in to get the reflected apples on the water. So the material existence is just like that. Everyone's fighting it out here. When one lessens the fight, he comes and surrenders more to Krishna. He comes closer to the mode of pure goodness or goodness. And therefore he gets the post of a demigod in his next lifetime. And those who are struggling very hard get the post of an animal. And those who are a little bit rely upon Krishna, and at the same time want to struggle for material happiness, then they come to the material world and get some position in the middle or sometimes even the upper planetary systems, depending on their degree of piety and material struggle. In any case, the devotees have nothing to do with this, and therefore they're considered to be infallible. And although we're considered to be, according to the Krishna book, we're considered to be demigods, on the realm level of demigods when we're executing devotional service, that's only because we're doing things out of duty more than a pure affection for Krishna. We may flatter ourselves with the title of devotee, but the question is, what are we devoted to? Unless we actually have awareness of Krishna and affection for him and his devotees, then what are we actually devoted to? We're aspiring to become devotees. But at least if we're devoted to the process of becoming a devotee, then one day we'll become a devotee. Therefore, in the end of the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, does anyone know the last verse in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? Our Bhagavad Gita scholars here. What's that? Let me see if they get the first word here. Ye tu dharma mitam idam yatoktam paripasate sadadanas matparaha bhaktas te tiva me praha. Ye tu dharma mitam idam yatoktam paripasate. That one who follows the imperishable path of devotional service and makes me the supreme goal. I don't know if the supreme goal is, that's in the translation. Completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, I guess I got it right. Are very, very dear to me. Ye tu dharmi tami dam yatok tam paripasate, shadadanas te matparaha bhaktas te tivate, bhaktas te tivate, bhaktas te tiva me priyaha. Tiva. Tiva means intense. Intensely engaged in devotional service, me priyaha. They're very dear to me. But then Prabhupada writes that even those who are just trying to follow the devotees, they're also, they become dear to Krishna. Those are the neophyte devotees Krishna describes in the 7th chapter, where he says, Chatura vidha vajante mam jana sukhidina arjuna artha jignasi artha arti gyani charvara tarshiva. That four kinds of pious people approach me. The distressed, those who want material happiness, those who are searching for the truth, and those who have realized the truth, at least partially. Then he says, Tesham gyani nityukta eka bhakti vishishate priyohi gyanam yoyartam aham sacham mama priyaha. Those who are actually acknowledged, sarva evete gyani twatma mame mitam astitat sa yuktama mam eva nuptamam gitim. That those who are neophyte devotees, that they're also dear to me. But out of all those neophyte devotees, the one who's actually knowledge of me, he's the most dear to me. In other words, we're trying to gain knowledge of Krishna. We're trying to perform devotional service. We're trying to become dutiful in our activities to please Krishna. We're trying to understand what Krishna wants, first of all. Unless we understand what Krishna wants, we'll never understand if we're doing what Krishna wants. And if it becomes too complicated, it means that we haven't really understood what Krishna wanted, because Krishna is not trying to make it complicated. Like Krishna wants us to remember him, for instance. And we think, well, that's too difficult. Anyhow, then he gives us so many other things to do so that we can eventually make it simple and remember him. So devotional service becomes complicated because we don't accept the simple thing. Therefore, he has to give us so many complicated things to do, so eventually we become simple. So if things seem confusing, it's only because we're so complicated. And if we try to just understand what we're supposed to do and follow it in the midst of our complication, then gradually things will become simple and then we'll know what to do all the time. Namely, to remember Krishna and to become an instrument for Krishna, especially in spreading devotional service. When everything becomes simple, that's all we'll do. And when things are complicated, we have so many other things to do. And then once in a while, we do those things. And therefore, we're considered to be fallible. Because sometimes we do the right thing, sometimes we do the wrong thing, but at least sometimes we do the right thing. Therefore, we're considered to be dear to Krishna. Krishna is dear to us. Because he's affectionate to all of the souls. So even when one does a little something, then Krishna becomes very happy when we're doing a little something, like remembering him with devotion. And when we're doing everything else, namely thinking of how wonderful we are and how great our activities are and how much we're worthy of praise and adoration and service, then Krishna says, all right, give him a little time. He'll figure it out. It's a gradual process. Maya will take care of him. She's a good teacher. So here at the end, here in the conclusion is that the demigod Indra is praying, and actually what he's praying, he admires the devotees like Prahlad Maharaj. He knows he's caught up. He likes what he's doing. He likes his wife. He likes his kingdom. He likes everything that everyone's calling him Indra, that they come and bow at his court and give him things, and he likes all those things. And he's not going to give him up. And Krishna is not going to help him give it up because he worked too hard for those things, too many lives of pious activity. But at least Indra, he also knows he's in Maya and that actually the goal is to become a pure devotee. So at least he'll give some lip service, offer some prayer like that, although he's not going to take up the process. And then he knows Krishna is pleased and he'll get what he wants. He'll protect his kingdom a little bit. Security. So I'll stop there. Any questions?
Maharaj, do demigods also have Mangalarati?
I can't remember. It's been a long time. I doubt it, though. They don't have. They have festivals where they chant Krishna's glories. That we know. That's in Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Upabharna, who is one of the incarnations of Narada Muni, he was a very beautiful demigod, and he was surrounded by all these beautiful demigoddesses, apsaras and others, and he was singing. Prabhupada said cinema songs one time during a festival of the demigods. But you're not supposed to sing cinema songs in the heavenly planets, which means, you know, love songs. Materially love songs. So the demigods heard him singing these things, surrounded by these women, cursed him to become a Shudra. That way he took birth and later on became in the family of a maidservant. But then he had the good fortune of associating with the Bhaktivedantas during the rainy season. And that way he heard about the glories of Krishna and how to become Krishna conscious and took it up seriously and later on became Narada Muni. So generally they, at their festivals at least, they chant Brahma Samhita and other... Brahma especially likes when they chant Brahma Samhita. But as far as, you know, Guru Vastika prayers, that's for us. That was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. But they get up early, the demigods. Because they're not sleeping. They have bodies which are quite fit. They're quite healthy. They get up early and because there's a lot of enjoyment. Why would they want to sleep? So many things to do. Life is just one... It's just like one game for them. You Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You have mentioned that two kinds of living entities, Ksharas and Akshara. And the other day we were discussing about the position of Tulsi Devi as a plant here in the material world. Is she in this category of Aksharas, or
is
she expansion of inner energy?
Indra?
No. Expansion of inner energy. No, Shrimati Radharani, as Rinda Devi.
She's the internal energy of Krishna.
She's expansion of Shrimati Radharani. Rinda Devi, yes.
Yeah.
So in this world, is she a jiva or she is a shakti?
She's shakti. Shakti.
Shakti.
Shakti tattva.
Shakti tattva.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, how could she expand herself in so many different tulsi plants unless she was incredibly empowered by Krishna? I mean, only Krishna, in the pastime Govardhan Leela, Krishna was eating tons and tons of sweet rice and halava and all kinds of things, laddus, and he was still hungry until they offered him one tulsi leaf. And then he was satisfied. Mm. Because he knew how to appreciate Tulsi's service.
Mm.
That couldn't be an ordinary personality.
Mm.
Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Krandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.